You're listening to the Blake Winchester Loves America, the most podcast show on the Freedom Flame Podcast Network. This isn't just another podcast. It's a battle cry. A battle cry in the war for America's soul. Blake Winchester doesn't just love America. He's here to save it. If you're not ready for hard truths and even harder consequences, turn back now.
Patriots, welcome back to the Blake Winchester Loves America, the most podcast show, the only show that cuts through the lies, stands firm in the truth, and waves the flag of freedom higher than anyone else dares. Today, I'm here to talk about something sacred. No, I'm not talking about politics or my Donald Trump commemorative plates. I'm talking about Christmas, our beloved holiday that has been hijacked, watered down, and turned into a commercialized spectacle devoid of meaning. But not in my house, Patriots. Not on my watch. I decided this year that Christmas needed saving. It needed a hero. And I was more than willing to step up to the plate. Or, more accurately, the front yard. You see, I had a vision of a Christmas nativity scene that wouldn't just honor the birth of Jesus, but would also pay tribute to the spirit of America. A nativity scene that would bring together faith, patriotism, and freedom in a way that no one had ever seen before. Now, some people might say, Blake, isn't that a little ambitious? To which I say, absolutely not. The way I see it, ambition is what built this country. The founding fathers didn't sit around saying, maybe we should tone it down. No, they went big. They went bold. And that's exactly what I planned to do. It all started a few weeks ago when Brenda and I were driving through the neighborhood. We were admiring the Christmas decorations, or at least I was, though there wasn't much to admire. One house had a single string of lights draped over a bush. Another had one of those inflatable snowmen that looks like it's on its last leg. Pathetic, I muttered, shaking my head. What's pathetic? Brenda asked, already sounding annoyed. The decorations, I said. Where's the creativity? Where's the spirit? These people are treating Christmas like it's just another day of the week. Brenda sighed. Not everyone feels the need to turn their house into a theme park, Blake. It's not about a theme park, I said. It's about making a statement of faith, a statement of patriotism, a statement of freedom. She didn't respond, which I took as her silent agreement. That night, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I sat at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee, scrolling through pictures of nativity scenes on my phone. They were nice, sure. Baby Jesus in the manger, Mary and Joseph looking on, the shepherds and wise men standing nearby. But something was missing, something big, something bold. And that's when it hit me. What if the wise men weren't just wise men, but the founding fathers? What if baby Jesus wasn't just lying in a manger, but wrapped in an American flag? And what if, towering above the stable, there was a bald eagle, its wings spread wide, watching over the scene like the ultimate symbol of freedom? It was perfect. It was inspired. It was exactly what Christmas needed. The next morning, I told Brenda about my idea. I'm going to create the most patriotic nativity scene this neighborhood has ever seen, I announced. She didn't look up from her coffee. Uh-huh, she said. I'm serious, I said. This is going to be big, huge. People are going to talk about this for years. As long as you don't spend a fortune, she said, clearly uninterested. Brenda, I said, you can't put a price on saving Christmas. She rolled her eyes. But I didn't care. I had a mission, and nothing was going to stop me. The first step was gathering supplies. I went to the hardware store and bought lumber for the stable, string lights for the roof, and a flagpole to hold the Star of Freedom. Then I found an online retailer that sold eagle statues. I ordered the biggest one they had, 12 feet tall with an 8-foot wingspan. It was perfect. When the statue arrived, I realized I might have underestimated its size. The box barely fit in the driveway, and it took me and Greg from next door to lift it onto the platform I'd built above the stable. But once it was in place, it was a sight to behold. The lighting was another challenge. I wanted the stable to glow with red, white, and blue lights, but the cheap extension cords I'd bought couldn't handle the load. The first time I plugged everything in, the entire block lost power for about 10 minutes. Brenda came outside with a look on her face that could have melted ice. "What did you do?" she demanded. "Nothing," I said. "It's just a minor technical issue." "This is insane, Blake," she said. "Do you really need this many lights?"
"Brenda, it's not about the lights," I said. "It's about what the lights represent. They're a beacon of freedom, a shining example of what this country stands for."
She threw up her hands and went back inside. I took that as her way of saying, "Carry on." Then there was the flagpole. I thought it would be simple to attach the flag to the roof, but the wind had other ideas. As I climbed the ladder to secure it, a gust nearly sent me tumbling into the bushes. Greg, who had been watching from his porch, came over to help. "Blake," he said, holding the ladder steady, "are you sure this is a good idea?"
"Greg," I said, "good ideas are for mediocre men. This is a great idea."
He didn't argue, which I took as another silent agreement. By the end of the week, the nativity scene was nearly complete. The stable was glowing, the founding fathers were in place, and the eagle stood proudly above it all, illuminated by a spotlight I'd borrowed from Greg. It was a masterpiece, if I do say so myself. But not everyone appreciated my efforts. The first complaints came from Mrs. Thompson across the street. "Blake," she said one morning, "do you have to start working on this thing so early? Some of us like to sleep past 7 a.m.
"And some of us," I replied, "like to defend the true meaning of Christmas."
Then there was Mr. Patel, who said the lights were too bright and were shining directly into his bedroom.
"It's like trying to sleep next to a carnival," he said.
"Carnivals are part of American tradition," I told him. "You should be honored." The HOA got involved shortly after that. They sent me a letter requesting that I scale back my decorations, citing community guidelines and light pollution. I tore the letter in half and taped it to my mailbox with a note that read, "This is America, not North Korea." As tensions rose, Brenda spent more and more time at her sister Bertini's house. She claimed she needed space, but I knew the truth. She didn't want to stand up for what was right. She didn't have the courage to fight for Christmas. Patriots, I knew I was in for a battle. But I wasn't backing down. Patriots, let me tell you, when it comes to defending the true meaning of Christmas, you'd think I'd have a little backup. You'd think there'd be some rallying cries of support, maybe a neighbor or two stepping up to say, "You know what, Blake? You're right. Christmas does need more patriotism." But no. Instead, I was met with hostility, silence, and what I can only describe as a coordinated attack on everything I stood for. It started small, sideways glances from Mrs. Thompson as she retrieved her mail, Mr. Patel muttering under his breath as he walked his dog past my yard. Even Greg, my so-called helpful neighbor, started avoiding me after I borrowed his ladder for the fifth time without asking. But the real blow came when Brenda stopped coming home entirely. She didn't even bother giving me a reason this time. Just a quick text saying she was staying at Bertini's for the weekend. No explanation, no apology, just a blatant abandonment of her duties as my wife and partner in this patriotic crusade. I didn't reply. What was the point? Brenda had made her choice, and it clearly wasn't me or Christmas. But I wasn't about to let her absence stop me. If anything, it only strengthened my resolve. While the neighbors whispered and the HOA sent passive-aggressive emails, I doubled down. I added more lights, more decorations, more everything. By the time I was done, my nativity scene wasn't just patriotic. It was a shining beacon of freedom, visible from three blocks away. The stable itself
had been reinforced with plywood and painted in red, white, and blue stripes. Mary and Joseph now wore colonial-style coats, and the wise men, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin, were positioned in a triumphant pose, holding gifts wrapped in Constitution-themed paper. Above them, the eagle statue perched proudly, its wings illuminated by spotlights. And of course, baby Jesus lay in the manger, swaddled in an American flag. It was perfect. It was glorious. It was everything Christmas was supposed to be. And yet, the complaints kept coming. The day after I finished the display, I found another letter from the HOA in my mailbox. This one was longer, filled with legal jargon about light pollution and community standards and potential fire hazards. I didn't bother reading the whole thing. Instead, I marched straight to my computer, typed out a scathing response, and CC'd every HOA member on the email. "To whom it may concern," I began, "your blatant attack on my God-given right to celebrate Christmas in a manner befitting a true patriot is both unconstitutional and un-American. This nativity scene is not just a decoration. It is a symbol of faith, freedom, and the values that built this great nation. If you think I'm going to take it down because a few snowflakes can't handle the truth, you've got another thing coming." I ended the email with a link to a video I'd made of the nativity scene, complete with a voiceover describing its significance. Then I hit send and waited for the fallout. It didn't take long. By that afternoon, the neighborhood group chat was buzzing. People were accusing me of being obnoxious, insensitive, and my personal favorite, a fire hazard waiting to happen. Brenda texted me to say I was embarrassing myself. Greg stopped answering my calls. Even the local fire department showed up at one point to inspect my setup, citing a report about excessive electrical wiring. "You've got about 6 too many extension cords here," the firefighter said, pointing to the tangled mess running from my yard to the power strip in the garage. "It's not about the cords," I told him. "It's about the message." He didn't seem convinced, but he let me off with a warning. I took it as a victory. But the real turning point came 2 nights later, during what I can only describe as the Great Nativity Standoff. It started innocently enough. I was in the yard, adjusting the spotlights on the eagle statue, when I noticed a group of neighbors gathering across the street. They were holding cups of cocoa and singing Christmas carols. Badly, I might add. At first, I thought they were just being festive, but then I noticed the signs. One said, "Keep Christmas peaceful." Another said, "Stop the noise. Start the joy." And the biggest one, held by none other than Mrs. Thompson, read, "Say no to Blake's blinding lights." It was an ambush. They'd set up a counter event right there in their driveway in direct opposition to my nativity scene. I could feel the anger rising in my chest, but I took a deep breath and reminded myself that I was on the side of truth and justice. I wasn't about to let a bunch of cocoa-drinking cowards intimidate me. I walked over to my speaker system, cranked up the volume, and hit play on my playlist of patriotic Christmas music. God Bless America blasted through the speakers, drowning out their off-key rendition of Silent Night. They looked over at me, clearly annoyed, but I just smiled and waved. "Freedom isn't silent," I shouted. The standoff lasted for about an hour. Every time they tried to sing another carol, I turned up the volume on my speakers. Eventually, they gave up and went inside, leaving me victorious, or so I thought. The next morning, I woke up to another HOA letter, this one threatening to fine me if I didn't reduce the noise levels and remove the eagle statue, which they claimed was a safety hazard. Brenda texted me to say I was out of control and that she was thinking about staying at Bertini's for a while. Even Greg, who'd been my reluctant ally in the early days, left a note on my porch asking me to tone it down. Patriots, it was clear that the forces of darkness were closing in, but I wasn't about to back down. This was my hill to die on. My Gettysburg, my Alamo. I just didn't realize how literal that would become. Patriots, when I tell you the forces of darkness were closing in, I'm not exaggerating. My yard had become ground zero for the war on Christmas. The HOA was doubling down. Brenda was still MIA at Brittini's, and the neighborhood's so-called peaceful counter-event had proven that they were more interested in Coco and carols than standing up for their country. But I was undeterred. This was about more than just lights and decorations. This was about freedom, faith, and the right to celebrate Christmas the way God and the Founding Fathers intended. The morning after the Great Nativity standoff, I woke up to find another note taped to my door. This time, it wasn't from the HOA. It was handwritten with large scrawling letters that read, "Take it down, or we will." No signature, no clue as to who wrote it. My first instinct was to march over to Mrs. Thompson's house and confront her directly. But Brenda had always told me I was too quick to assume. Instead, I decided to install a camera in the yard, something I'd been meaning to do anyway. Not only would it help me catch the coward who left the note, but it would also allow me to capture footage of the nativity scene for posterity. Future generations deserved to see this masterpiece. The rest of the day was spent reinforcing the eagle statue, which the HOA continued to insist was a safety hazard. Greg, who had been avoiding me for days, finally wandered over, likely out of morbid curiosity. "You're really doubling down, huh?" he said, hands stuffed in his jacket pockets. "This isn't about me, Greg," I said, tightening a bolt on the eagle's base. "This is about defending Christmas. If they take down my nativity scene, what's next? Are they going to tell you you can't put up an American flag? Are they going to ban fireworks on the 4th of July? It's a slippery slope." Greg sighed. "Yeah, but maybe, I don't know, maybe you could ease up a little. People are pretty upset." "Upset?" I said, standing up to face him. "Greg, I'm not upset. You know what I am? Passionate. Committed. And if that makes me a bad neighbor, so be it." He didn't respond, but his silence said it all. Greg didn't have the courage to stand with me, and that was fine. I'd stand alone. That night, I decided to take my fight to the next level. If the HOA and the neighborhood thought they could silence me, they had another thing coming. I set up a live stream on social media, titling it "Blake Winchester's Patriotic Christmas Under Attack." Within minutes, a few familiar names popped into the chat. Some old friends from high school, a couple of cousins, and even a guy I'd met at a rally once. "Good evening, Patriots," I began, standing in front of the glowing nativity scene. "I'm coming to you live from the Winchester home of freedom, where the forces of political correctness and anti-American sentiment are trying to erase Christmas as we know it. But I'm here to tell you, we will not be silenced. We will not back down. And we will not let this holiday be hijacked by the left." The comments started rolling in immediately. Some were supportive. "You're a true patriot, Blake," while others were less kind. "Dude, it's just Christmas lights. Chill." I ignored the trolls and focused on my message, delivering a rousing speech about the importance of faith, family, and the American way. The live stream must have struck a nerve, because the next morning, I woke up to find two city officials standing in my yard, clipboards in hand. "Mr. Winchester?" one of them asked, looking up from his paperwork. "That's me," I said, crossing my arms. "We've received several complaints about your Christmas display," he continued. "We're here to assess whether it's in violation of city safety codes." I gave them a tour of the nativity scene, pointing out all the thought and effort that had gone into its construction. "You see this eagle?" I said, gesturing to the towering statue. "It's not just decoration, it's a symbol of freedom, watching over baby Jesus as he brings hope to the world." The officials exchanged glances. "It's impressive," one of them said cautiously. but it's also precarious. If it were to fall, it's not going to fall, I interrupted. I've reinforced it with steel brackets and concrete anchors. This thing could survive a hurricane. We'll need to confirm that, the other official said, jotting something down on his clipboard. The inspection took nearly an hour, during which several neighbors gathered on the sidewalk to watch. Mrs. Thompson stood front and center, arms crossed, with a smug look on her face that made my blood boil. "Enjoying the show?" I called out. "I'm just making sure they do their job," she replied. When the officials finally finished, they told me they'd be filing a report and would let me know if any changes needed to be made. I nodded politely, but inside, I was fuming. This wasn't just about safety. It was a coordinated attack on my values, my beliefs, and my right to celebrate Christmas the way I saw fit. That evening, as I sat on the porch, watching the lights twinkle in the cold December air, I couldn't help but feel a mix of pride and frustration. Pride in what I'd built, and frustration at how blind everyone else seemed to be to its significance. Brenda still hadn't come home, and my text to her went unanswered. The neighborhood remained silent, save for the occasional hum of passing cars. Even Greg didn't come by to chat, though I spotted him peeking out his window more than once. But none of that mattered. I was standing on principle, and sometimes standing on principle means standing alone. Patriots, sometimes the battle for what's right comes at a cost. Sometimes you find yourself standing alone in your front yard, surrounded by the ruins of your dreams and the blinking remnants of Christmas lights that once stood for something bigger. That's where I found myself on Christmas Eve, as the story of my great nativity crusade came to an end. The city officials returned that morning with their final report, and it wasn't good. They deemed my eagle statue a hazard to public safety, citing its weight, height, and the fact that it was leaning precariously due to a poorly reinforced base. They gave me 48 hours to remove it or face a fine large enough to make even Brenda's sister, Brittini, stop texting her Pilates instructor. I tried to argue, of course. I told them the eagle wasn't just a statue. It was a symbol, a testament to everything this country stands for. But they didn't care. Symbols don't count in building codes, apparently. Then came the icing on the cake, an official letter from the HOA demanding the removal of my entire display, citing repeated disturbances and excessive brightness. They even included a list of neighbors who had filed complaints. The list was long, too long. Greg's name was on it. That one stung. By the time the sun set, the writing was on the wall. I didn't have the money to fight the city or the HOA, and my neighbors were clearly done with me. Even Greg wouldn't return my calls. Brenda sent a final text saying she was spending Christmas at Brittini's and that I needed to figure some things out. So I did the only thing I could do. I took the display down. It wasn't easy. Every piece felt like I was tearing down a part of myself. The founding fathers came down first, their colonial coats looking sad and limp in the moonlight. Then the lights, which had burned so brightly just a few nights ago, were unplugged and coiled into tangled heaps. The eagle was last. It took me, a crowbar, and more muscle than I thought I had to pry it off the platform. When it finally came crashing down, it took a chunk of my roof with it. By midnight, the yard was empty, save for a few broken ornaments and some stray pieces of plywood. It was over. I sat on the porch, staring at the dark, empty space where my masterpiece once stood. For the first time in weeks, the neighborhood was quiet. No carolers, no protests, no shouting matches, just silence. I'd like to say I felt defeated, but that wouldn't be the truth. Because deep down, I knew this wasn't the end. This was just a setback, a temporary pause in the ongoing fight for what's right. As I sat there, eating a cold slice of Brenda's green bean casserole straight out of the dish, I thought about next year, about how I'd do things differently, bigger, better. Maybe I'd add fireworks. or a live reindeer, or a snow machine that spelled out Merry Christmas in the sky. The possibilities were endless. And as for Brenda, well, let's just say I have a feeling she'll come around eventually. After all, she married me, didn't she? She knows what she signed up for. Until then, I'll keep fighting the good fight, because that's what patriots do. Merry Christmas, patriots. God bless America, and God bless this podcast.
You've been listening to the Freedom Flame Podcast Network, where truth burns brighter than the lies of the mainstream. If you haven't subscribed yet, what are you waiting for? Real patriots don't hesitate. They take action. They stand tall. They hit that subscribe button like their freedom depends on it, because it does. Don't be the weak link in the chain of liberty. Subscribe now, or spend the rest of your days explaining why you let your country down when it needed you most. The Freedom Flame is watching. America is watching. Make the right choice now.